Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast for Star Trek Picard on Paramount Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 8, Surrender. Aaron, what did you think of this episode?
I thought it's another great episode. It's highlighted between the struggle for supremacy in Data's own positronic brain, between Lore and Data. I guess it's not even Data's brain. It's Alton Soon's brain. They're struggling for supremacy within it. I did see the resolution coming a mile away, but I still think it's a cool positronic judo move that, of course,
you are what you eat, essentially.
Yeah, and Lore fell for it hook, line, and sinker. He didn't understand the integration assignment.
There's
this rumor development of a Star Trek Legacy show where it's going to be the original bridge crew of the ED minus Picard gallivanting around, and like I think they found a clever way to get Brent Spiner back into the role, because he's like, I can't play an immortal robot, I'm an old man now, and stuffing him into old man Soon's body, aging husk that they can do now, like in the fullness of positronic technology. I mean, shit, if it gets me more of this and it's as much fun as this has been, I'm 100% on board for that. But like having Data here now, finally, all like seeing them all around the conference table at the end, seeing Riker and Troy fucking around, I had a big smile on my face throughout most of this episode. I still don't know what the fuck is the deal with
Jack,
although hashtag team left nut, I still think it's got a lot of possibilities. I really do.
Okay.
I do feel like, you know, I don't know if that's literally how the mechanics work, but him being a changeling baby making a lot of sense still. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I liked it. I really like seeing my whole crew working together. You know, we got a little bit of that last episode. We get a little bit more of it this time. What's not to like there? I think the performance and the performance of Vadic and the tricks that they use to beat her are all very good. She's totally unhinged, but something about it is working for me. I can very easily see this character not working. But whatever Amanda Plummer is doing here is just like, it's right on the edge of being too cartoony, but still being believable for me.
Yeah, because like it's such an extreme thing she went through.
Right.
Such a crazy, that like I could totally believe that you would turn into a maniac you know, you're being medically tortured by this Starfleet institution that also tried to genocide your people. Like, what wouldn't you do against...
Yeah, and what does the personality of somebody who has been through that look like? Who knows? But I believe
she's
it could
literally
look like
scarred.
This.
Like, yeah, I mean, you can like she's. It's an interesting performance. I'm actually kind of sad to see her go a little bit. I assuming that she's dead. Has to be
unless she like warms back up in the fires of the burning ship, but like then she just cools back off again. It doesn't matter.
Plus I think I got blown up by like a salvo of 5 photon torpedoes. Like she is just scattered to the cosmic void. I feel like
gotta be, yeah, she'd have a hard time reconstituting at this point.
But yeah, like what is the actual goal? What are they trying to do with Jack? What are they trying,
know,
why his powers do seem like they're a key, because like Vadic was delighted to see him using his full potential in this episode, so that's somehow playing right into their hands. But you know, we got the whole crew together. We finally figure out something for Deanna to do.
Yes.
With their psychic powers other than getting psychically raped. Mm-hmm. Like, this actually, like, God, it makes me so pissed off at the Next Generation writers that, like, all along they could have had her just go into people's minds and do mental battle and do all these cool things. But it's like,
sure,
you know, Marina's talking about not getting any scripts. What are we going to do? What are we going to do with her? Well, we could psychically rape her. That's the kind of deep storyline. Let's do it. And then she's complaining again. What? How about we psychically rape her again, but she gets pregnant and chooses to keep the psychic rape baby? This is storytelling. Season 5.
Classic.
Again, she wants something to do. They did it in the movies. They did it in the movies. So, like, I am so glad that they gave her something to do that actually befits her station as a psychic counselor. And yes.
Yeah, I mean, up to this point, the highlight of Deanna Troi to me was getting drunk with Zephram Cochran in a bar on Earth, like 21st century Earth.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
I'm not as think as you drunk I am. Yeah, congratulations, Marina Sirtis. You got a real plot. It's taken
an important 30. One.
Yeah, 30, 40 years, but they gotcha. They gotcha. They delivered.
And they've been doing just enough in this show with kind of keeping me sidetracked on the Jack thing that I haven't felt like they've been jerking me around or this is developing too slowly. Even though it's 8 episodes now since we first met Jack, and we still don't know really anything more about what his problem is, what his damage is, right? Mm-hmm. But there's been so much other stuff going on that it hasn't really mattered. That's been kind of like tantalizing and juicy, but it's been in the background. I'm interested to see what this actually is. I assume you think we're going to spend a whole episode behind the red door next time? Or do you think we're going to Frontier Day next episode?
Oh boy, a whole episode just
because we spent a lot
mind.
Of time in season 2 behind Picard's red door, as it were, right?
That's the other kind of subtle criticism I had of the episode is that, and the series is like, my God, they really love their weird portals.
They do.
You know, like every season has been revolved around a door opening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They like that metaphor. I can't imagine you can sustain an entire episode of just this, you know, the psychic goings on. But the thing is like, it feels like the A plot and the B plot is the Titan desperately escaping the physical enemy that's chasing them, but they dispatch that and they've got a cloaking device. Like there's no real technical reason that they should have anything but a leisurely ride to wherever they need to get to for the Frontier Day. That's the whole point of the cloak. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
We still have two episodes.
They could do a lot of interesting things with like the rest of the crew. Like you could fill up a B and C plot of just the crew catching up and trying to solve the external problem of trying to figure out what the frontier, why Deanna is trying to plumb the depths of his mind. So, but yeah, I honestly don't know. It
Worf
could just be a cold open type of thing.
Worf could go kill a few more Ferengi gangsters. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering who I feel like we'll know the ancient voice.
The one like behind the red door?
Yeah. The way they mention it seems like somebody that, and I would say it's the Q, someone from the Q continuum, except for we've already done that. So
how about Borg Queen? Wait, we've already done that. who else could it be?
God, would it be? You remember Skin of Evil, the Argus guy?
Oh yeah.
What if they retcon him to be a changeling that's been stuck on this planet for hundreds or thousands of years and's gone insane? He's turned into black goo because all he's had is severed from the link and he's gone just insane and he is somehow back and fighting. That would be kind of interesting.
Why had I heard that Denise Crosby might be in this season? Because there's your connection right there. Like they could do.
And they,
if they brought him, it, whatever that thing is, the goo monster into it, then Tasha could show back up somehow.
Mm,
Potentially. Well,
it'd be funny if the Denise Crosby appearance is just her holograph. Her death memorial slash data sex trophy.
That's weak. That would be so weak.
Yeah, I got her a guest star spot, though. No, I don't even know if that's true. Yeah, that's because that's like the raw obvious Romulan angle. But they demand the Romulans would kind of be coming in late at the plot with a steel chair at this point. Which, that's kind of their thing.
It wouldn't have to necessarily be like evil Taja. It could be like a physical representation of Taja. Like it might be a changeling, right? Like maybe somebody's trying to talk smack to Data or something, one of the changelings, and they just transform into Taja, but older. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like I said, the thing that I like is the Argus, the theory that I just came up with, and I really love it.
All right, sure.
But I'm trying to think, it's like, because that's like all the other disembodied voices, like could it be Nagilum? Could it be?
Oh God, that would be out of nowhere.
Right.
Could it be?
Well,
the
I guess
Keurig?
We'll have to find out. I guess we'll have to find out.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Ah. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Captain on the Bridge, welcome back to the podcast maneuver. We start off with Geordi unjacking Lore slash Data from the ship. Vedic shuts down the lights, the comms. She closes all the doors while her goons just murder their way through the crew of the Titan. Picard and Beverly struggle to regain control. Jack goes into GoPro vision and mind controls a guard outside. The guard gets killed and Jack's like, well, I guess there's no hope. They've got it too heavily fortified.
Is that what happens, or is he just like had a vision of what he could do? Because I got confused about whether that was actually happening or whether...
I think it was really happening.
So he just got a crew member killed to experiment with what he could do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of darkness swirling around him.
I mean, there's a lot of crew members getting killed. What's one more?
That's true. I mean, yeah, if everyone's getting murdered in the corridor, you know.
Mm-hmm. And Vedic addresses the crew again. She's trying to threaten them into handing over Jack.
Yeah, she's very creepy, talking about metaphorically robbing the crew of their eyes and their ears and the road before them, and the way she's kind of like conducting the symphony of screams and stuff on the... It's good unhinged villain stuff. And after last episode, her backstory has kind of earned that not being eye roll and cringy.
I think so. Although she's smoking on the bridge of a starship, which I'm pretty sure has to be a crime of some sort. Like if she weren't tried, it's like getting Al Capone on tax evasion. That she's going to be, if she weren't killed this episode, she'd be tried for smoking on the bridge.
It's actually slightly higher crime than genociding a planet in the Federation regulation. Right. Smoking on the bridge, that's real shit right there.
Yeah, creating a phage virus that kills off a species. Uh-huh. We can let it slide.
Misdemeanor.
You know, tough times, but...
Class D Federation misdemeanor. Smoking on a bridge, that's it gets you sit the rural Pinthe for 15 years of hard Klingon labor.
Uh-huh. Well, let me ask you this. What are the limitations of Jack's ability? Could he mind control one of Vedic's goons? Could he mind control Vedic?
That was my question. Did he try to mind control one of those goons? I thought that was where they were going at the end, and it just didn't work.
Maybe.
It's a good question because we've never seen him do that, and now Vedic's dead, so no more experimenting on poor Vedic.
Nope. We go over to the Shrike, where Deanna patches up a bloodied Riker. He talks about the ways he's changed in the Nebula and professes his love for her. Deanna says some wild shit here, man. She says a changeling showed up at their house. She knew it was a changeling. She fucked the guy anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Ate his pizza. Mm-hmm. And Riker's just cool with it.
Fucking legend, Deanna.
What the hell, man?
I do think this is her joking. I think she's fucking with him, because then she says, seriously, I knew, like okay. She saw the changeling right away. But it's pretty, pretty funny that, like, what was he like? He's like, good in bed, bad at pizza. And Riker's like, just like me. And I thought that's like, yeah, that's just like he affects. Yeah, I thought it was, all of their banter was really funny. Although I mean,
one more dose of the Riker charm. Yes, absolutely.
One more dose of the Riker charm. Love it. Can I ask you, because she rolls her eyes at him trying to invoke M'Zadi for the billionth time. She's like, I wish I'd never taught you that fucking phrase. I should have the doing. And this is very cute. They're doing essentially Marion and old man Indy on the steam, the tramp freighter. And she says, I wish I'd taught you this word, Yinturu. Now, I don't have subtitles because we're watching these all with the screeners.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he asked her to translate it. And I think she said, baby, if it meant signs.
I rewound this no fewer than 25 times.
Same.
Trying to figure out what she says.
I listened with my eyes closed. I listened with it muted, just looking at her lips. I tried to Yarl Linny my way to figure out what the fuck it is, and I couldn't.
I got it. I finally got it. It took me a full hour. It took me longer to watch this scene than the rest of the episode combined, but I got it.
God she bless says, you, Jim Jones. I heard as baby if it meant signs.
You're so
and
close.
She actually said,
baby of immense size.
Oh.
Right?
Big baby. Okay.
Yeah, he's a big old baby.
Baby if it meant signs. Okay. All right.
Baby Yintaru. If it meant signs, Yintaru. This... I was looking around because I'm like, okay, what are the Betazoid words that I know? I was trying to figure out, do we know this word from the past? Because I couldn't understand it, and I was like doing everything I could to maybe the internet.
That's what
knows
I went
this
to Memory Alpha
means.
And was trying to do like a bunch of different spellings to see if this was like deep lore. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I found out that we only really ever hear one word in the entirety of Star Trek of the Betazoid language, which is
M'Zadi. Oh, shit.
And this is like the second word ever, which when you think about it, makes a lot of sense because they communicate telepathically. So I don't imagine they speak a lot. But like, it's wild that we've had 50 years of Star Trek and we only know one Betazoid word.
They didn't like when Mr. Hom was like gonging the bells and stuff. There wasn't a Betazoid word for...
Apparently not. I mean, there's like the Chalice of Reeks or whatever. There's like proper nouns, but there isn't really. Just a word.
That's like saying Luxana is a proper, right. Like a Betazoid. That's just a name. Yeah. Interesting.
That blew my mind.
Well, now we got another thing. If all you Star Trek nerds are calling each other M'Zadi, you now got something to have affection and annoyance with each other.
Yeah. Yinturu. Let's move over to and the other half of the scene, or the end of the scene, is like Deanna questioning whether they did the right thing giving up the compromise code. So we find out that like they gave that up, they didn't like escape and send it.
Well, they also set up the fact that Worf's going to rescue them because Deanna can sense that most of the enemy force have left the ship. It's just a skeleton guard. So they got a hope here.
And they'll be able to wander around and find Picard's remains and all that stuff.
Right.
And Riker thinks Picard can handle Vedic.
Yeah, there's this like, if we have any luck, he's already set a classic Picard trap, and then it just cuts to the Titan completely under Vedic's control.
it's amazing. Over on the Titan, Shaw tells Seven that her actions... Really, her inaction of not blowing up the turbo lift have consequences. Vedic decides to try to coax Jack out of hiding by saying she's going to execute a bridge crew member every 10 minutes starting now.
Do you think, because I continue to really like Shaw, he's such a cool captain concept. It's like by the, but he's like, but he's still kind of courageous and cool. You know, he's the anti Kirk and Picard, but he's not like Craven.
No, he's very level headed. I actually do like him quite a bit. And I think in most circumstances, he's 100% right.
I think it would be really cool if they, if he's the captain of Star Trek Legacy, all of the bridge crew of the Next Generation have been effectively court-martialed, except for Picard, who retires.
Okay.
So like, they just literally run back TNG, except for Shaw's the new captain, which I think would be a hilarious dynamic.
All right, on the Titan or
on the Titan
on an inter- okay.
Well, if they want to hit us with the Enterprise F, I wouldn't say no to that. I haven't seen it yet, but I think the Titan's a cool ship. I actually really like the Titan.
Oh yeah, no, I like the Titan a lot. All right, next up we've got Beverly and Picard telling Jack not to fall for Vedic's trap. Jack insists he's not a changeling, but he is different. And then he tells him that he can jump into people's heads and mind control them. And Sydney confirms the truth of that. Picard says they can use his overwrite codex to take back control of the ship. And Jack suggests that they use his ability to get onto the bridge remotely to do that. I love this plan.
Yeah, it's old classic Star Trek. They do a lot of things with command codes.
Yes,
it's very,
I mean, that makes sense, right? You want you want these protocols in place. There's probably like 200 years of history that tells them these are smart things to do.
Yeah,
I mean, well more than 200, right? Probably 1,000.
This goes back to Age of Sail, where they all had code books, right? That they would, you know, where you when you would meet on the high sea, you would exchange private signals with like flags and gunfire, and they'd update those every few. But it's like, yeah, like, and it just adds a lot of intrigue because it's something that everyone trusts implicitly, even though it's always a possibility they can be stolen. And that's a huge exploit. Like it's just literally Age of Sail shit in space. And I love it.
Yeah. And then Jack executes this plan. He jumps into one of the crew on the bridge, puts the codex in. Unfortunately, Vedic realizes what's happening and stops him before he can hit the last button that says override, and Vedic executes one of the bridge crew.
Why can't he just hit the button?
I know. This always drives me insane.
His middle finger is 1 inch from the Lycar's panel. All he has to do is flex his middle finger, and then he can flip her off with it, too. But no, he's just busted, so he has to stop.
Yeah, I hate this so much. This is like every hacker show you'll ever see, when like the police bust in and stop them, they can never, as they're getting dragged away, hit enter.
You just have to hit space to continue. It's the biggest key on the fucking keyboard. I just can't quite
press any key to continue. I can't.
Yeah, I think Starfleet officers should go through toddler training, because any toddler in the world can tell you that when you get caught, you just do what you're doing three times faster. So you can get your mom tells you to stop banging the pot and you keep banging the pot. She comes over there, grab the pot and just bang them harder. Just get
you're in trouble anyway.
Yeah, fucking drum that shit, little man. Go out swinging.
Yeah, it's unfortunate they can't do that. Especially because Jack's mind controlling, and it's not like he's got anything to risk here, right?
Well, middle fingers are tricky when you're mind controlling. It's the toughest digit in the human body, the wiggle. You don't think so because you've been doing it for 40 years at this point, Jim. But like, yeah, if you go back, you know, it was a tough one. It was a tough one to learn.
Maybe this guy has middle finger problems. Maybe he's got a vestigial middle finger. Maybe he's an alien that.
Plus, he's not even human.
His middle finger.
He's a Bajoran, right?
Maybe I didn't see the nose.
Thought he had the earring and the nose ridges. He's definitely got earring.
He had an earring, but I couldn't tell because he might have been a comms officer. That might have been a comms thing. I'm not sure.
I thought he had. It might just be the association with the earring that did it for me. But I thought he had nose bridges too.
You might be right. I was looking at his middle finger, not his nose.
But I could be wrong. He could be human. But if he's alien, that's even better. Like, yeah, like that's got to be tricky business, taking over alien physiology.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was asking questions about whether Jack can take over a changeling, because That seems crazy.
You taking over Alien, like, forget their middle fingers. Like, you're just overwhelmed. Like, what do they got going on in their pants? Like, that would give you a couple seconds of just like, what the hell am I feeling here?
Definitely, like, yeah, Jack, it would, right? Like, Jack would be the type that was a little too busy exploring the nether regions.
I mean, you just get, like, everything. Like, how, like, do you understand how much rumbling goes on in our body and we just kind of are used to it? Like, our gut is gurgling and our heart is thumping. And, like, you get in an alien body and, like, what the hell is that? What the hell is that? You don't know.
It's true. It's like,
he just
inner
pisses
space.
Shits, pops a boner. He does, like, God. All the biological functions just fire off.
He drools,
in sequence,
he sneezes, he coughs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Has convulsions. Just the eyes roll back in their head. He's just a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah. And then he turns into goo, because how's he going to know how to keep the form? Right? He does all that and then just goo.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, he's not. What are you saying? This guy is a secret changeling on top of everything else?
Oh, no, no. I'm saying
one of my conscious functions is not keeping my body corporeal. I'm sorry. It just kind of does that. In fact, if I died, it would stay that way for a long time. I think that's a reflex. That's an automatic thing you get.
This is true. But if you were to warg into a changeling, you wouldn't know how to do that.
Oh, yeah. You would instantly turn to goo. Yeah. You'd goo it up
after shitting yourself. All right, let's move on to Deanna and Riker talking about their reactions to the death of their child, coming to some terms here. Riker was devastated. Deanna tried to take away his pain with her powers and ended up feeling everyone's pain. And they make up and confess that neither of them actually like the home they're living in. And then Worf shows up and frees them. I always love them getting together. They're so, like, they have real issues to talk about, but then they're so sweet and so fun when they finally get all that dirty laundry out there. It's such a beautiful relationship. I love it.
And there's some dark stuff. Like, Deanna's probably coloring outside the lines, but for understandably, like, if you were an empath and you could, you know, your husband's dealing with this, all this pain from the loss and... Mm-hmm. You're having to deal with it anyway because you can feel it. Like, it seems kind of selfless to want to carry their burdens. There's also a little commentary about probably emotional labor there too.
And her heart and her head are torn, right? Because as a counselor, she knows that you, like she says, you can't skip to the end of grieving. But she sees the pain. She feels the pain. It's not even that she sees the pain that Riker's in. She feels it.
Yeah.
And so her heart is telling her, I can take this away from him. I can make him not feel it. It's not the right thing to do, but it feels right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'd also like them realizing that they are both staying at this planet that they canonically moved to because it had some kind of healing properties they thought would be good for their son, Thad, and he's gone. Mm-hmm. And they're like torturing themselves with the shitty double woodpecker and the bad pizza and the poisonous rabbits. And Troy's kind of like a cosmopolitan person that likes people and being around cities, and they're living on this agrarian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's them going in on the judgy foyer and then Worf busting in. And I had all but forgotten the fact that they, in the late season desperation of TNG, they decided, you know what? Let's fucking ship Worf and Deanna. And you know me. I love shipping. And I'd always thought this was a interesting ship. Mm-hmm. Like, that is such... and they did wild stuff, like when the crew devolved and Worf turned into a Klingon beast. And he was thought that Deanna was his mate. And he was trying to, like... bust into the sick bay to eat / fucker. I like that he comes and it's like you can tell that like Deanna probably dated him and he caught massive feelings and she was kind of like fucking around and he is such a Klingon and she couldn't take it and now he's back and the first thing he says like, Deanna, all I've done is think of you. I've worked on what was he saying? Like, my sensitivity and my emotional openness. And like, he has been doing nothing but drinking chamomile tea and reading Oprah Winfrey books so he can try to get back with Deanna, even though she's married to Riker. And he's doing all this in front of Riker.
Oh yeah. And then his line about, is this a rescue mission or a continuation of the torture?
And Deanna's face, so like, It bothers me a little bit that the only thing they figured out to do with Worf is make him into a joke. But it's a really entertaining joke.
He's still a badass, too. Like, he's maybe more badass now than he's ever been.
Yeah. He looks cool. He's badass. So that, but he's also the butt of all the jokes. But that's fine, I guess. Yeah. Like, as long as they're this funny, I thought it was a hoot. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a hoot.
Let me ask you this. I know Riker is portrayed as, like, the ladies' man and having a very active and interesting love life. Does Worf secretly have the most interesting love life in all of Star Trek? Because he not only...
Jadzia.
That's what I'm saying.
Deanna.
Right? A Trill? Not many people are probably getting with a joined Trill.
Who was his fiancée?
There aren't that many of them.
Bellet?
I don't forget. Her name.
Yeah, dude, he's...
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's combat there fucked with his way through alien. A lot of women, man.
And like, very, very interesting ones, let's say. Like, Deanna Troi being the empath. I bet that's interesting during the lovemaking. Getting with a seven-lifetime being symbiote is pretty interesting. I'm thinking Worf has got secretly the best love life in all of Star Trek.
Although Riker's gotten around too.
Riker's like banging Ryza women left and right, and that's gotta be fun, like, for a while, but holodeck.
Pansexual. Like, he's canonically into trans people, he's canonically into warrior women are sexist or misandrist. Like, he likes that. He likes pushing the limits of his human sexuality. Kinky alien sex with Frasier's wife.
Well, call me when he gets with the joint Trill and we can talk. But
that's true. That's true.
Worf's carrying that flag for me.
Yeah.
All right. Jack tries to convince Beverly and John Luke that they should give, or that he should give himself up. Sydney says he can't. There was something about 90 trillion operations per second. Is 90 trillion a lot? I'm trying to think of, like, modern graphics cards and how many transistors they have. It's certainly not 90 trillion, but hundreds of years into the future.
Yeah, I assume there was this something in the Star Trek Next Generation technical manual when they're going in on the Enterprise's computer core and they realize, like, Jesus Christ, how much storage capacity and calculation should we put in this? Because it's got 400 years of development. We got Moore's Law. Like, what's a number that's too big? I assume that they did that again, where it's like, I kind of want to crack my technical manual and see what they had versus what they're talking now. Because this is supposed to be an improved positronic brain. That's supposed to be even better. And I think wasn't Data's positronic brain already canonically more powerful than the Enterprise computer?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So I just, like, this is all Trek, no babble. I just heard, like, an absurdly powerful computer by Star Trek standards.
Yeah. But it would take, you know, her a year to crack this thing. It'd take her dad a month. They don't have that kind of time.
Yeah. But Data, we can get his, like, that's what they're wanting you to think, like, oh my god, we need Data's brain.
Hell yeah. So JL's crew goes to Geordi and tells him that they have to connect Data back up to the ship. Picard wants Data to purge Lore, but his ethical routines apparently won't allow it because it's a life form and he can't kill it. Geordi decides to remove the partition anyway and just see how it goes. So they remove the partition in his mind, and Data and Lore start battling it out in their shared brain.
That's literally what it is. It's like, see, because, like, I guess they don't have any other option. They're, like, out of, like, she has got the ship by the nacelles. She is killing systematically all the crew. They can either give up or, you know, take down the partition here. But I like with the Dominion, the changelings, how, like, every time they see each other, they have to do this elaborate, they do this in Harry Potter, too, where it's like, because, like, you can magic yourself to be anybody, and they're always pointing wands and, like, Sirius, the first time you transformed into a werewolf, which body part did you lick of mine? And he's like, oh, Alfredo, my old friend, you know well that every time I transform to a werewolf, I lick every part of your body. And it's, ah, and they do that, the same thing. Here.
There's a character named Alfredo in...
No, I choked. Okay. I couldn't. I'm this is like my third sci-fi podcast. I've got Mando and Salacious Crumb and Deanna Troi's sex life whirling through my head. Harry Potter got squeezed out.
Also, Salacious Crumb is the nickname of Deanna Troi's love life.
That's what she calls Riker's beard. So they, oh shit.
They have to elaborate test. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, what did you get for me for my birthday party? And like, I feel like that's the easiest thing in the world because they have established that Picard just gives away Chateau Picard bottles for every occasion. That's his go-to gift. And this is now, I think, the third different Star Trek character who's talked shit about it. Are they actually hinting that Chateau Picard is like Tubuck Chuck in the 24th century?
Well, Tubuck Chuck is actually good. The problem here is it's the price of Tubuck Chuck, but not the quality.
It's probably $5 Chuck now, but still, yeah. I mean,
it's extraordinarily dry, apparently. Yeah. Unless we're to believe that Geordi just does legit have shit taste in wine.
But does everyone? Because there's been multiple people that have been like, yeah, I got your bottle. No, I didn't. Like, it's like maybe Picard is the last true wine connoisseur on the planet, or maybe they make shit wine.
Here's what I like to think. I like to think Picard is amazing at making wine. The problem is he's very bad at corking his bottles, and he always tries to give away the old vintage because he thinks, well, this is special. This is going to be good.
Vinegar.
And yeah, it's just turned to vinegar in the bottle.
Romulan
so every
vinegar.
Time people are just like, God, he makes terrible wine. All right, Worf shows Riker and Deanna John Luke's body, and Raffi explains the changeling is one of the portion of Picard's brain infected with Irrawaddy syndrome. Still don't know why. Riker realizes that the Titan has been taken over, an alarm goes off on the strike. They decide to beat cheeks. Get out of there, man.
I like Deanna and Raffi's introduction. You know, like, this is very, they're like the only people that don't know each other. And they're like, Raffi, Troi. And it just, like crazy days, huh? Like, it's this very Starfleet professional, you know? I liked it.
Sure.
They're like old hands at this.
Yeah. I don't think by the end of the episode we get any more clue as to what they want from John Luke's Irrawaddy body, right?
Also, why did the holographic representation of Picard's corpse look like it was missing its limbs and they've got his entire body in this tube?
I don't know. And he looks pretty jacked, too. Like, I couldn't help but think this is not a 95-year-old Patrick Stewart.
No, they went back and got his, like, first contact body. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know, man. Do they try? Maybe there's a changeling in there with him, and the parts of his body that were missing, the changeling has recreated.
# team left nut.
Yeah, I really don't know, dude. They don't give us any more information about why they want the Irrawaddy part of his body.
Just the Jumanji parts. I don't understand either.
It's weird. I assume the red door will open and we'll know everything, but
yeah, we'll get some answers when Deanna kicks down that red door.
Yeah. All right, Jack goes to the bridge holding a thermal detonator.
I've got the exact same in my notes. It's like suddenly a space-time continuity rift opens up and a golden protocol droid stumbles onto the bridge and says, oh me, oh my, he's holding a
thermal detonator.
That's exactly what he's doing. It's exactly. Not exactly what he's doing, but it's exactly what he's doing.
It looks like that's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's played exactly like that too. I'm a little bothered by the director's apparent insistence that Jack crouches and acts more squirrely. He's holding this thermal detonator like he's got a rapier that he's looking for a hole in her defense. Mm-hmm. And like, You contrast that with like how Princess Leia rolled in Return of the Jedi, where she just like, here's the fucking bomb, what are you going to do about it? And just standing there like a Chad.
Right.
Or a Stacy, I guess. And he, oh, yeah, like he's just like
Chad equivalent.
Yeah, like was this the one the director from like the first season of Star Trek Next Generation had the Ferengi doing all that, you know, crouching monkey bullshit?
Oh, right. Because
he's in the full.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't an action scene. This is a tense standoff. You don't have to like jump her with the thermal detonator, dude. Anyway.
Yeah. No. He's got to make it look good though, right? He's because if he has to set off this shield prematurely. It's
yeah,
not gonna work. Their whole plan
up.
Is gone.
Yeah.
So he's got to make it look intimidating.
Yeah, I don't.
The
I,
red
see,
light is part
I think,
of that.
I think him prancing around is the opposite of intimidating. Him standing there,
okay.
Feet planted, just like I got. Yeah, and I'm not afraid to use it. Like,
yeah, he should have sat in the captain's chair, kicked his feet up onto a console.
Yeah,
been like, yeah. What now, huh?
Cried havoc and let slip the detonators of war.
Okay. Geordi monitors Lore's progress, devouring data. The data's involuntarily handing over his memories to Lore so he can make them his. And
did
we get our Tasha cameo.
Did you see, and this is the part where I'm not sure when Data decided to start using the strategy, but this scene for sure, when he just started offering Lore his memories.
Yeah.
Did you see where this was going?
No, not exactly.
Okay, cool.
It was a bit of a surprise. I liked it.
It was at this point where he started freely offering and like Lore just greedily taking them and without any questioning. I'm like, oh, they're doing the thing. It's like, well, if you have two containers and once one of them is poured, like you pour one container to the other, it's like, well, you know, did
you? If
you
pour
really
the
win?
Red into the blue, well, now they're both red and they're both blue.
You're gonna be.
You
purple,
don't lose the
right?
red.
Yeah. So I thought it did, and it's very, I mean, this is kind of their deal that Lore underestimates Data. And I also thought it was interesting that like this is an inversion of the relationship because Lore always was the one with more experience, not just in terms of like programming, but life experience. You know, he got to live a whole lifetime and Data was kind of like the young kind of wet behind the ears. Now that's flipped. Like Lore's been disassembled and turned off for like the last 40 whatever years. And Data's been out living the life and doing adventures and having relationships and, you know, all this stuff.
Unraveling
and
the secrets of the universe. Yeah.
But Lore still thinks he's the big brother and he gets little bro'd.
He does. Yeah, it was good. I did eventually realize what was happening before the big reveal, but it wasn't this scene.
Yeah.
It was when he starts like really explaining like, oh, and this cat means this to me. And
yeah,
this
if you
deck
don't,
of cards
yeah, if you,
means
if you don't pick it up
games,
by,
yeah.
if you don't pick it up by the cat, you know, like if you think
late.
The Lore can ingest a cat memory and be unchanged, then I don't know. I don't know what you, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Jack threatens to set off an explosive on the bridge. Vedic allows the bridge crew to be moved to safety, but Seven stays behind to suffer the consequences of her actions, I guess. Vedic talks all about Jack's isolation and mentions the red door that he's seen in his visions. Bah, bah, bah. How does she know about that? How
and
does she know?
Voices. That, he, like, all of his life he's been, isolated. Now all these voices. It sounds like she's describing joining the Great Link. # Team Left Nut. He's half changeling, I'm telling you.
Yeah, he might even not be half changeling, he might be all changeling. I don't know. Beverly should
hashtag
probably
left
remember
and right nut.
Giving birth to a changeling child. Yeah, left and right.
left nut, right ovary. Team left nut, right ovary. They also second commando infiltrated Beverly's uterus and they just set up 100% changeling shop.
Is it possible he's one of the
they control the means of reproduction?
He's a one of the test tubes that was also in that lab that he like what's behind the red door is the memory of the torture. I don't know how that works with Beverly having a child, but like
I always thought the left commando was one of those test tubes. Yeah.
It feels like that's where they're
this,
going.
I also had this elaborate
knows.
Plan.
How else could she all... know?
No, he has to have some changing DNA. Has to. And I think there. Do you agree with my take that she's describing like being awakened to the Great Link?
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I could see it.
I can't remember like Odo describes that too, because he never was a member of the Great Link until he gets a chance to experience it. And then
I just watched that episode recently.
Okay, so like I was actually hoping you would. Was there any commonality between the way they described it? I was wondering if Amanda Plummer was actually cribbing notes from that episode to really lay the hint on thick, or
I don't remember like specifically if there was, but yeah, I mean the feeling of connection, and like there is a, I don't know, it's hard to remember exactly how Odo explains it, because it's intentionally not like we would think of a connection
it's
with somebody,
an alien
right?
experience, right?
Yeah. But no, I think that's a good guess.
But the thing is like Odo described as like, you know, like the comfort, like, you know, belonging to something never even knew, and like how blissful it was.
Coming
this
home
seem to
is
be Jack's.
Is how he describes it, but like.
Oh, is it perhaps part of the things they did to fuck with Vedic's biology is that they could no longer join the Link?
Oh, maybe.
And that like Jack is some kind of,
and that isolation. Uh-huh.
And like he's the way to like have the improved biology, but also be able to join the Link. But there's something malignant could to be. It that I that's the thing I can't figure out.
Yeah, is it malignant from his point of view only, or is it malignant from, would Vedic consider it malignant? Because when she talks about it, she couches like all of this in the terms of like isolation and disconnection, but that's the experience he's having now. If he were to open that red door, maybe he would stop feeling that isolation, right? Maybe he could
thinking, like,
rejoin
if,
the Link, all that.
If Odo experiences the Link opening as like these malicious whispers, Odo, screams in the background and phaser firing, and it's like, I don't know.
And one of those round airlock doors from the station that's opening.
Right.
Rolling out of the way. Yeah.
A red, yeah. I do, but also it could be his partially human interface fucking, you know, like misinterpreting it, because
yeah,
you know, like if I was jammed in some kind of great collective with every human and on this planet, I think it would be a frightening experience
for sure,
you know, not being prepared for it.
That's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing that always like it kind of surprised me when Deanna was like, oh, I really miss the city and all those people. I'm like, that has to be a hard experience for an empath, a hard life, just being around millions upon millions of people constantly, unless you have ways to get away from it all.
Did you ever read the last three Expanse books?
I haven't yet.
All right, because they have some interesting Great Link type stuff going on there too.
Oh, okay.
But never mind. Shields up, here comes the ads.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our 4-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to the podcast maneuver.
All right, let's move on, I guess, to Data giving Lore all of his memories while explaining the meaning of each one. When Lore has taken the final memory, Data disappears. They think he's gone forever. He's dead. But then he returns and says, "My memories have made us one." Data wakes up. He takes back the Titan. Rafi fights some of Vedic's goons. Maybe we should stop here and talk about the Data and Lore stuff, and then we can get to like the final climax.
I love this stuff. Brent Spiner is Data. He is Lore, and he's doing all the great things here. And I got extremely emotional when they pulled out Spot. Because at first when they pulled out the Sherlock stuff, I'm like, oh well. Data's just going to realize he's stronger than Lore, and he's going to just beat him. Like, Lore is so he thinks he's this and that. And he's just, but then as the things I'm like, oh, he's filling him with his memories. And then, but I that's the things that kept on surprising me. It's like, okay, they brought out Yara. I'm like, well, that makes sense. And then the deck of cards and him explaining like all the games he had and the friendships, right. And you know, they're all good things of it all. But then when he grabs Spot, I thought, like I said, that's I talked about how like Spot's the creature that taught him how to love, and of course he gives that the Lore, and Lore like a dumb fuck eats it. it's great. It's goofy as hell, because like, how the hell is this display that shows all the red and, you know, all the blue dots in Data's head that are Data are being taken over by the red dots, and there's winking, and there's this one last flickering light in that Spot, and Geordi's crying and Picard's crying, and of course you know, this is all cribbed from like Neo versus Agent Smith.
Sure.
They did some of this in season one Doom Patrol, but it worked, and I thought it's clever. And plus, I just want to see Data kick Lore's ass in a uniquely Data way, in a very gentle, non-violent I love that they said goodbye, brother, which is another one of their shticks. And now he's unified.
Yeah, we are me. Somewhere along the path, I was trying to figure this out, and I'm like, okay, what is the end goal here? And I thought for a second maybe Data pulling out all these memories was going to say, and you, brother, are a memory of mine. And Lore was going to destroy that memory to destroy the last of Data, and he would end up destroying himself. Because Data, they made a point of like, Data can't destroy Lore, but Lore could destroy Lore. Didn't turn out to be that. I think it turned out to be something better than that, actually. A synthesis of the two.
Yeah.
Although I will say the synthesis of the two acts remarkably like Data. I think if any personality is manifesting more, it's Data.
Oh, yeah. I think he's definitely, and I think that's, he should be. He should be the stronger dominant personality. But I definitely think that you're going to see a facility with humanity that he gets from Lore and Lore's experience with the emotion chip. And
sure.
Some of the, I thought it was interesting when Lore realized he'd been gone and he was, or that he had been had by Data, he acted fearful. There was a little bit of B4 that came forward too. Like this, like childlike, like almost whimper that he gave. I thought was interesting. I guess like I said Brent Spiner's just really good at this, but I definitely see. Well, okay, because the other thing is, are we sure that the evil that Deanna's sensing is Jack Crusher, and there's not a little bit around Data?
I was wondering that. I don't know that she can sense positronic feelings.
Well, but now he's got human feelings and a positronic human brain that's indistinguishable from
He's one of those positronic golems. Yeah. I don't know, man. Maybe.
Because it's like, there's one thing, there's one point where Deanna says, you know, she buckles and she says, I sense a vast, all-consuming darkness on the ship. And then the next scene, it's Data. It's Data's face. And in the language of cinema, oftentimes, that means they're linking the two subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see, like, dark Lore, like, you know, Lore has got, you know, he's letting Data, he's double, triple bamboozling him. But I don't know. I don't know if I like that, because I like the clever way that Data beats Lore and by integrating him.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't do away with Lore. He kind of forces Lore to become part of him.
You talked about, like, this Raffi. I don't know. She learned Klingon Kung Fu, so she gets to show it off.
Let's talk about this whole fight. So Raffi's fighting some Vedic goons in the halls. Turns out Jack's thermal detonator was actually a shield generator, which he deploys, and Picard vents everyone on the bridge into space, except for Sydney and Jack. Seven and Jack, sorry. And Vedic freezes solid, smashes into the ship. It's blown up. All of this.
It's also medium clever. I like how Vedic says, as she realizes that she's fucked, she goes, fucking solids. And then she gets blown out to space and freezes solid and then shatters. Yeah, it's like that's like I said, that's medium clever. I like that.
That's great. I think the explosion there looks fantastic. It's got all that shrapnel twinkling in the starlight, almost becoming stars, right? It's so fucking cool, just the imagery. Let's talk a little bit about the bladed weapons versus the changelings. They're not changelings, right? They can't be, because bladed weapons would do nothing against a changeling.
Right. They're mechanically separated meat or something.
Yeah. Vedic goons specifically. They must be solids. They must be. I don't think they're changelings of any kind.
Well, yeah, there's more solid. Well, they're more solid than your average changeling.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not know. I kind of had a little bit of problem. But like, it's also, we're not 100% sure that these are all changelings, right? They could just be
sympathetic,
or these could be followers of the ancient evil, or I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
I don't understand where they're going with this. There's, you know, I was just running through, like, could they just be V'ger? I was trying to think of, like, all the disembodied evil threats that could be considered ancient and whatnot.
Like Data. Attention, Titan. This is your friendly positronic pissed off security system. Yeah. Disembodied threats.
What do you think about Data issuing threats with profanity?
He's part Lore now, right? That seems right to me.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's true.
He's using contractions, right? He's telling jokes.
It always feels a little clumsy when they have Data say the bad words, you know. It's like, you know, when he's pointedly saying to hell with orders or something, and like looks like he's getting, and you know, when the Enterprise D's going in on the one Malcolm... planet there. He's like, oh shit. And it's like, haha. See, the android that can't use contractions is saying naughty words.
It always feels a little bit like a child testing out cursing around their parents for the first time, right?
Yes.
Like, there's the sheepishness with which he says it, and then he sort of looks around like, is anybody gonna mention that's my first hell, guys? Mm-hmm. You gonna say anything about it?
He's pissed in context. I have never pissed, actually, but I'm using it in context.
He's becoming more human by the day. Get off my bridge is a good line from Seven. Yep. Here, love it. Yep.
Channeling Harrison Ford.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, I want to say I've heard that in Star Trek before, but it's definitely the Air Force One thing.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you make of the evacuation hatch on the bridge? Just opening up that view screen.
It makes a lot of sense if you needed to. Like, there's probably several points in the hull where it's designed to blow out to help the crew get out or something.
Especially the bridge, right? You gotta have an evacuation hatch. Like, I'm thinking when the Enterprise separates, crashes on the planet in Generations. Emergency hatch is super useful there. You gotta have it. Mm-hmm. I always think of like Star Trek as fully contained things. Like, they wouldn't have hatches and doors and stuff other than airlocks, because they just beam into them. But when the transporters stop working, you gotta have some way off.
Yeah. No, I like that. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, you know, bathrooms. Like, they never show the bathrooms in Star Trek, but they have them.
They have to.
One days if they want to show, I don't know, Troy run into the bathroom to throw up or something, and it's like, oh my god, it's a toilet in Star Trek. It's like it makes a lot of sense. So yeah, emergency hatches makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but it's just like the toilets in Star Trek are probably just designated transporter buckets, right? Yeah, just beam that shit into space. Literally just beam the shit into space.
Wide dispersal pattern, right.
You don't have to wide disperse it. You can just let it float out there as a log.
Why wouldn't they? You want space shit just floating around?
O'Brien, chief transporter officer, is not going to like mess around with him.
Is that going to be the new transwarp? Remember that plot in the later days of TNG where their transwarp devices were tearing apart the fabric of space and time? They had, like, it's essentially Star Trek dealing with pollution, right?
Was that making all those bubbles? Is that what was happening?
It was something. It's just something like there's something to strain. And I think they dropped that going forward. But it'd be funny if, like, Federation scientists are studying the vacuum of space and they found in the last 200 years it's slightly less vacuumy than it was before. And they realize it's because we keep wide dispersing our shit.
Background radiation has turned into background. Yeah.
0.00001% of all the matter in the Alpha Quadrant is wide dispersed shit.
That's entropy, baby. It's inevitable.
True.
Anyway, yeah, like I said, Shaw takes command of the ship again. He hasn't blow up the Shrike. Explosion looks great. And then Deanna feels what I can only describe as a great disturbance in the Force. She describes it as an all-consuming darkness on the ship.
That is, you love seeing a good climactic starship battle where, like, you know, we've been fucking struggling with this Shrike since episode one, certainly episode two, and just like something about the Titan wheeling around and just pumping about five photon torpedoes, just like, you know, like,
give her
like
all she's got.
It's really satisfying. Like, the idea, Star Trek's so genteel, but at the end of the day, you're trying to shoot projectiles at a ship full of people and kill them with the vacuum of space. Just like, you know, sending these guys down to Davy Jones' locker. It's so cool. Like, just this thump, thump, and their yards are all hitting, and it explodes. Something very primally satisfying about the ship combat in these sci-fi series.
Yeah. And then the crew welcomes Data / Lore / whatever back. His neck cracks. He uses a contraction. Mm-hmm. Tells a joke. And he and Geordi profess their love for each other, which I found super sweet, super nostalgic. It hit all the right buttons for me.
They should have hugged.
Should have hugged,
right?
Yeah.
They should have hugged.
He's got that subroutine now. He can hug.
He's familiar in all the ways you can love a human, apparently.
True.
You know, he's got encyclopedic knowledge of it. And you can't look up the entry for, like, you haven't seen your friend for years and years and you thought they were dead. And Jordy, what the fuck is your excuse?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get you used to be awkward, dude, but hug your friend, okay?
You've got daughters now. My God. You know how to hug, man.
Yes.
Maybe he doesn't.
Hug your friend.
Can you imagine the back rub that Data can give with his with his encyclopedic knowledge of human anatomy and those incredibly strong hands?
Truckosaurus claws he's got. Duranium grip. Yeah, it'd be impressive. I just love him doing the Data, like, jerking his head to the side like he does, and it cracks his neck because he's now in a old human body. It's talking about, like, how he's kind of transcended humanity. Like, he's died, lived to tell about it. And they also they do this in a later scene, but, like, you know, canonically Data wanted to die. It was his wish that Picard honored in season one, and I like it. They remembered, like, oh fuck, we've unwittedly violated his do not resuscitate order. And Data's like, nah, it's cool. Cause, like, I was tired of being an immortal robot, but I'm an old man, and this is all kind of new and cool. And I dig it.
Yeah,
I'm glad that they remembered.
This is a different entity, right? This is not Data.
True. And I like that they remembered that and kind of had an answer for it that I thought was satisfying.
Sure. So the new and improved Data is reintroduced to his old friends. They all say how much they missed each other. Deanna warns him that Jack is the Nexus of Darkness and volunteers to go speak with him. And then Picard rips out Data's spinal column and shouts, "There can be only one positronic Soon Golem." No, because now Data and Picard are the same life form. They're the same
type. They
really
are. No, they're 100%. 100%.
It's so weird when I think about that. How Data has come halfway to humanity. Picard's gone halfway to positronic robot, and they met in the middle.
And every time we see positronic beings meet each other in the canon, they instinctively wanted to take each other down, like Data and Lore,
like
right? They're locked in. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the Highlander protocol to Soon put. That'd be funny if that's exactly what happened. speaking of sending heads, Lieutenant Worf, I also thought it was funny when, like, so Deanna gets in there and she immediately starts talking shit about Beverly and Picard and Jean-Luc's son, like, oh, he's the Nexus of Diet. I think it'd be funny if, like, Beverly's like, oh, yeah? Well, at least our son's still alive, Deanna.
Jesus.
You know, it's like, just like, oh, I guess there's no rules on how we're just going to go in on our fucking kids, okay? All right?
What's their daughter doing right now?
That's a good question.
She's
really
home alone
question.
Eating leftover pizza?
She's in a changeling solid concentration camp that they've shipped her off to.
Yeah, probably.
Right.
Also, eating Riker's leftover pizza.
They were all taken prisoner, and she was brought before Riker.
I assume the daughter was taken prisoner. Yeah, not just
had
left there.
Had to be. Yeah, she's just in some kind of changeling penal colony now.
Yeah, and will be for the foreseeable future.
So we know about this darkness, this ancient, this voice inside that is described as ancient and weak. Again, I don't know exactly where they're going to this, but I'm intrigued because it's got to be somebody we know. It's got to be someone from the past, and it can't be Q.
It's Khan. Don't know how, but it's Khan.
That's the right nut coming in.
Mm-hmm.
They were Khan and the changelings locked in eternal struggle inside Picard's scrotum for the last 20 years. God. Who will come out on top? Just twisting and turning. You ever wonder what they're doing in what their boys are doing in that sack? Well, that's what they're doing. They're struggling for supremacy.
Maybe it's Malcolm McDowell. Wasn't he the same race as Guinan?
Oh, the Alurian, the Elarans.
Yeah, whatever she is. She's ancient. Well, I don't know. It depends on your definition of ancient, but she's pretty old. Which would mean he could be pretty old. They had that whole experience with the Nexus together, him and Picard, and maybe there's some Nexus juice in there. I don't really know. Just trying to think who has a connection to him.
ancient. I don't know. She might be pissed if she heard you talking that way.
Look, she's canonically, she's old, right?
This is true. Yeah,
she was hanging out with Mark Twain.
She's at least 400 years old. That's pretty ancient.
Anyway, Deanna conducts a hurry-up therapy session with Jack. She tells him to open the red door in his mind, and the episode ends just as he's about to.
You can't rush to the end of healing, Deanna.
Right?
I like her. Just after she said, you know, in retrospect, I probably could have handled my husband's grief better. Mm-hmm. She grabs Jack's hand and is like, you and me, buddy, let's kick in this trauma door. Poof. We've got no...
I got 15 minutes. The clock's running. Let's go.
Can you give me something like to take the edge off? Some kind of serotonin up? No, we don't. Because just hold my hand, boy. We're going in. And that door, like, you know, what is the one thing they tell you? Like, if you're, you know, like, you go to all these fire training, you know, like, the classes and, you know, the firemen come and they tell you. It's like they always say, you know, you got to get on your floor and crawl so you avoid the smoke. Also, when you get to a closed door, what are you supposed to do, Jim?
You jiggle the knob to let the other side know you're about to bust the fuck in, right?
But if you touch that knob and it's hot, you don't open, right?
Unless you're ready to bust the fuck in, and then you can open it, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, there's like literally magma. You look through that keyhole, and there's like fucking boiling magma. It's like, don't open this door.
Yeah.
Don't open this door.
No, she's going to get a face full of smoke in the next episode, I assume. Like, is this going to kill her? Is it possible Deanna's going to die from this?
How would you feel about Star Trek Picard killing one of the bridge crew of the original Enterprise D?
I would hate it.
Right? Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, that's some bad juju. I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they already killed Data.
Think she dies. Well, but back, they can't bring her back.
Positronic Soong bodies. She turns into a golem.
She can turn into a horrifying golem, and also she can do that little Spock thing where she just grabs Jack's head and says, remember, you know, and she just, you know, Betazoid downloads her mind into his body. Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. And then Deanna gets a horrifying golem body.
but she's like, you know what? I don't want the old man shitty golem body. I want the hot young Deanna body that I used to have. That's what I want.
Well, I almost certainly executive producers do. Like that would
right?
be, oh my God.
I mean, you don't
that
cast
would be so
Seven of Nine.
That would be kind of wild that they put Picard, they put Jean-Luc Picard in the old man body. And then, well, you know what?
Ridiculous.
We actually can digitally de-age you, Marie, make you look like you're 25 again.
We're jealous of what they've been doing with Mark Hamill over there in the Disney side.
Yeah. Let's. And in fact, we're bringing out the old blue dress for you to wear from the pilot. Going to get that sex appeal going again. No, I don't think they do that.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it, man. Any last minute guesses as to what's behind this red door? I assume it's the torture he experienced in the lab because he's a changeling, but we'll see.
A fabulous vacation showcase.
Oh, yeah.
And then
you have to pay taxes on that, Jack. Watch out.
And then Vedic's going to reconstitute and say, or would you like to go behind the blue door?
Mm-hmm.
And then Jack's going to be sitting there turning to Deanna and he's looking for audience participation. And he doesn't know which door to open. And
he asks his mom, who's familiar with the red and the blue. She's like, oh, fuck if I know. I just pick one.
Open both. Like,
right?
That's what I always did. No, I don't have anything else. I've made all my all best right. guesses. If you would like to send us feedback, I apologize. We haven't gotten to any of this year. It's been a weird schedule. We're recording all these in advance. We're going to do a roundup and then I had to go on vacation. It might just be a season ending thing, but I've been keeping up with it. Picard@baldmove.com. If you care to do that, you can also follow us, see all the other crazy things we're doing, doing Yellow Jackets on Showtime. We're doing Mando on Disney+. There's a lot of things we're going to science fiction. It was going to be a good year for science fiction. Foundation on Apple TV Plus is coming down the pike a little bit later.
Severance,
so check that
baby.
Out. Severance. That's the big bad sci-fi show. I'm looking forward to coming back again on Apple Plus. But you can follow all that on twitter.com/baldmove. And of course, if you'd like to help support what we're doing here at Bald Move and get a couple things for yourself, get some extra bonus audio, video, material, get ad-free feed. support.baldmove.com is how you do it. Otherwise, yeah, bring it on to the penultimate. I will make another announcement that, like, we have got to the end of another batch of screeners, and again, it's entirely possible that we won't get any more, because sometimes they don't give you the finale or the penultimate. If that is the case, then don't panic if you don't see Star Trek out for the day it drops. We'll be back as soon as we can, because we'll just have to watch it ourselves. But yeah, hopefully we'll get the screeners for the last two, and we'll continue to deploy these the day and time that the episode drops. We'll see. But either way, we'll be finishing out this season. I've really enjoyed it. We'll see you next week for the penultimate episode. As I said, and until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.